Hi, good morning. This is Dr. Roger Murphy. Thank you for joining me for this treating and beating low thyroid presentation. I know it's very early on a Saturday morning, especially for you folks out on the West Coast. I really appreciate you taking the time. I feel like this is going to be well worth it. For those of you who are having issues with low thyroid, low energy, or just poor health and trying to figure out what you need to do next, I hope that after this presentation, you'll have enough clinical pearls to get you on the right direction. A little bit about myself. I'm a board-certified chiropractic physician, board-certified nutritional specialist. I've been in practice for 23 years. I'm the author of 5 books for doctors and patients. 3 books are in bookstores, Treating and Beating Fibromyalgia and Chronic Fatigue Syndrome, which just came out in its 5th edition in the bookstores, Treating and Beating Anxiety and Depression with Orthomolecular Medicine, and Heart Disease, What Your Doctor Won't Tell You. For a number of years, I owned a very large integrative medical practice on the campus of Brookwood Hospital here in Birmingham, Alabama. Several years ago, I became a little bit disgruntled with that practice, and even though we were helping patients from all over the Southeast who came to see us with all sorts of chronic illnesses, with a focus on low thyroid issues and chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, I really felt like we had kind of crossed over a line to where we became very lackadaisical in our approach to our patients. Because, you know, what I've found in the last 18, 19 years that I've been practicing functional medicine, which is now a word that has gotten out thanks to Dr. Oz, and I certainly appreciate that. But for those of us who have been practicing functional medicine like myself for a number of years, it is what a lot of doctors call good medicine. And it involves looking for, testing for, and then treating causes and not symptoms. And unfortunately, in the traditional medical world, the emphasis is on treating symptoms. And while there's certainly a place for that, there's certainly a need for that, and thank goodness we have doctors and staff that are specially trained to do that, there's also limitations in that approach. We have an epidemic of people who are falling through the cracks. We have patients in clinics throughout North America who I would call medical misfits, the doctors who are interacting with them, pushing more and more prescription medications for a variety of different symptoms, have lost sight of the fact that really true health involves getting the patient healthy, and drugs don't make you healthy. Now, I'm not anti-drug by any means. I think there's certainly a time and a place. If you've got a raging strep throat infection, if you've got some type of herniated disc and you need a dose pack, you need some steroids, by all means, you need to do that. Where we run into the quagmire and the problems start to show up is when we become on prescription medications for the rest of our lives, and we've never looked at what are the causes of the problem instead of looking at treating the symptoms. And so functional medicine, the kind of medicine that I practice here in Birmingham, Alabama, 90% of my practice is now phone consults with patients all over the world, involves using high doses, but the right doses of vitamins, minerals, amino acids, and essential fatty acids to treat all sorts of illnesses. Obviously, my focus is on low thyroid, fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue, mood disorders, and heart disease, because that's what my books are about. When I sold my medical practice 8 years ago, I, again, had become a little dissatisfied with that approach that we were using, because oftentimes what we were doing is relying on prescription drugs to help us deal with some of the symptoms that the patient was presenting with. And there's a time and a place for that. But in thyroid in particular, what I found is there was this real, not only in our practice, I think we were really cutting edge. We did the doctors that worked for me, the 5 medical doctors, did a very good job when we were working together. But I think as a whole, though, if you look at the medical profession, most doctors, including the endocrinologists, doctors who specialize in hormone therapy, have a very slanted and a very misinformed view of thyroid. Oftentimes, what is happening is the patient is being treated by their blood work, and blood work is not the end-all, be-all, as we'll find out this morning. I really believe that doctors have to get away from treating ICD-9 insurance codes and blood work and treating patients. And that's really what we're going to talk about today, is looking at what is going on with why are so many people falling through the cracks with all the symptoms of low thyroid and yet never get the diagnosis. Well, this is kind of rudimentary, this slide presentation that I'm going to be presenting to you today. A lot of this comes from the program that I use to treat my functional fibro doctors in thyroid replacement therapy, mostly all natural approach. I'm not anti using the right prescription medications if it's needed and if it's going to do a better job than the naturals. However, there are a lot of natural over-the-counter things now that you can do, the same things that I do in my practice, and we'll talk about those today. Some of this material, it will be a little bit over your head, and some, like this slide, is going to be very rudimentary. So bear with me, and what I will want to go ahead and share with you is that all this material, if you have registered for the conference, will be sent to you by email. So you'll get this information, and you can use it any way you like. There's probably more information than you'll ever need on here, but I want you to have it. So what I don't want you to do is to get bogged down in all the details. Just sit back and relax, pour another cup of coffee this morning, and just let it come in. Get the big picture. You can always go back and listen to the replay of this audio, or you can go back and look at the notes and go from there. So anyway, let's get started. Your thyroid gland is at the base of your throat there in the front, and it's responsible for releasing thyroid hormones, which travel through the bloodstream, and then they convert oxygen and calories into energy. This is your metabolism. Now, your metabolism is the sum total of all your physical and chemical changes that take place within the body. And this is your cellular energy. This is the heat that's given off in the cells to then trigger biological, physiological functions that allow you and I to be human beings. If your thyroid is compromised, every cell, every organ in the body is compromised. And because of that, when your thyroid is dysfunctional, you're going to find you have a myriad of different symptoms. And that is because the thyroid plays a role in every system of the body. In fact, every cell of the body, every tissue, every organ is affected by proper thyroid function. According to the American Association of Clinical Endocrinologists, over 27 million Americans suffer from thyroid dysfunction, half of which go undiagnosed. Over 500,000 new cases of thyroid disease occur each year. Over 10 million women with thyroid dysfunction go untreated. These are people who have low thyroid, hypothyroidism, but never get the proper treatment because either their blood work looks normal and so their doctor says everything looks good on the blood work, we're not going to treat you, or they have something that's compromising their blood work, and yet the doctor can't figure out, we'll get into more detail about that, but these are the people who are definitely falling through the cracks. Now, there's another 8 million who are falling through the cracks who have classic hypothyroidism, which means that they do have abnormal blood work suggesting that they have low thyroid, and yet they're not getting properly tested, or they're just not making their way to the doctor to get tested. Unfortunately, a lot of patients will have a thyroid test, it'll come back normal, and then they won't have it tested again for 5 or 6 or 7 years. And in that time span, they've developed true classic hypothyroid with all the symptoms that go along with that. Now, hypothyroidism affects women some 5 to 7 times more than men. Thyroid disorders, we want to keep these separate. This is important here, but hypothyroidism is a condition where you have an underactive or low thyroid. You're not making enough thyroid hormone. Hyper or overactive thyroid, or otherwise known as Graves' disease, is a condition which the thyroid gland makes too much thyroid hormone. What we're going to be talking about today is mostly hypothyroid. And most of you on the call today will be struggling with low thyroid function, and that's what we will be focusing on today. The thyroid produces hormones that influence every organ, cell, tissue in the body. Again, your thyroid is connected. It is the trigger for all these different enzymatic and physiologic biochemical reactions. When it slows down or is compromised, then everything in your body slows down. So you're going to see that your metabolism slows down, your energy slows down, you start to gain weight, you start to have problems with low body temperature because you don't have that energy, that heat that's being triggered by the cellular reactions. So you start having cold hands and feet. You start having to wear sweaters around the house, even in the summertime. Definitely your energy level goes down, muscle strength, menstrual irregularities start to show up, all sorts of things start to happen. And because the thyroid is controlling this metabolism, again, it maintains proper body temperature, it regulates proper cell and tissue growth, affects the brain, the function, the neurotransmitters, which then trigger our response to stress and also affect our moods and how and our emotions, how we react to stressors. Well, here's the thing about the symptoms of thyroid. You can almost mention any symptom, and it could be your low thyroid. And again, that's because the thyroid controls every cell, every function, every system in the body. And this is oftentimes a stumbling block for a lot of doctors because they see all these different symptoms and they think, oh my goodness, this person is a hypochondriac. How could you have all these symptoms? Especially if you go and have the blood test and then the blood test comes back normal. Now, we're going to see in a minute that blood test is not the end-all and be-all of proper diagnosing thyroid, certainly not fibro either. But you look at the symptoms here, fatigue, headache, dry skin, swelling, weight gain, cold hands, cold feet, poor memory, hair loss. And the hair loss, one of the things you'll see with the hair loss, just kind of a tip, which just shocks me about how many stupid doctors there are out there. And there are a lot of stupid doctors out there. I'm sure you've been to some. But when a patient comes into my office and they're missing the lateral third of their eyebrows, or they have no eyebrows, and they're 34 years old, something's not right. And that is a huge clue that their thyroid is compromised. Now, why the doctor didn't catch that, our doctors, because it's usually plural doctors, by the time someone comes to see me here in Birmingham, Alabama, why they have not caught that, I don't know. It is mind-boggling to me, the stupidity out there today. We in traditional medicine, it's become so compartmentalized. You have so many specialists looking at their own little bitty niche that if you don't fit into their little niche, you get passed from doctor to doctor to doctor. The problem with that is every time you get passed from one doctor to another, you wind up with more prescription medications. Because just like a carpenter uses a hammer and nail, traditional medical doctors use drugs. That's what they're trained in. That's what they do. It's not that they're not trying to be helpful. It's just they really have lost sight of the way to truly help you is to get you healthy. And drugs don't make you healthy. What we need to be doing is looking at causes. Well, it's pretty clear to me, if I've got a patient sitting in front of me who's lost the lateral third of their eyebrows, has their hair coming out, has cold hands, cold feet, and can hardly get out of bed in the morning, they've got low thyroid. I don't care if it shows up in their blood work or not. We better do some other testing. And we're going to go into that this morning. We'll talk about some of these tests that you should have run to make sure you're not falling through the cracks. Well, here's some other symptoms. Joint pain, muscle pain, burning, tingling, stinging in the hands and feet, yellowing of the skin, which is a You can when that happens, you're not able to convert beta-carotene into vitamin A. And so you look like a carrot. I remember years ago, I had a patient, it's probably been, oh gosh, 4 or 5 years ago, I had a patient that flew in to see me, had been to all these different doctors, and she came in. And right when she walked in, I knew exactly what her problem was. She looked like a carrot. She was orange from head to toe. And, you know, she looked very unhealthy. Her hair was all dry and brittle and, you know, looked like it was thinning out. And she was in her 30s. Now, what compounded the problem was she was thin. And so the doctor she had been to never suspected she had thyroid. Yeah, they'd run blood tests, but all the normal blood tests had gone back normal. But it was obvious what her problem was. It didn't take a genius to figure that out. It just took some detective work. Sure enough, once we did the right testing and we caught that, she was a new person. She finally had energy. She was on 6 different medications, including Adderall and for energy and things to put her to sleep and antidepressants. She was able to come off all those medications within a very short period of time. So thyroid, it is something that should never be missed by a doctor because of the huge role it plays in our health. Now, we look at carpal tunnel. Oftentimes, patients go on and get carpal tunnel surgery when all it is a low thyroid problem. You have problems with balance, equilibrium, constipation. You have swelling in your ankles. You start to gain weight, start to retain fluid. Have high blood pressure, chest pain, arteriosclerosis, high cholesterol. Now, here's the thing. You get all these symptoms, and you go to your doctor, and they may or may not test for your thyroid. But if they don't test for it, and what they're going to do is they're going to find your high cholesterol, and what's the first thing they're going to do? They're going to put you on a cholesterol-lowering medication, a statin medication, which is guaranteed to compromise your health because it will interfere with your production of coenzyme Q10, which is the spark plug of every cell. If you start to yank the spark plugs out of your car, I guarantee you're not going to have much get up and go. In fact, your car is not going to go anywhere. And it's the same thing with your cellular metabolism. Once you start to interfere with CoQ10 production, it only takes a mere 25% reduction, then you start having all sorts of symptoms, including tingling in the hands and feet, neuropathy. People who go and start taking statin medications, within the first 1 year of taking those medications, 22% of them will develop neuropathy or polyneuropathy, which is nerve damage, which can manifest itself as tingling in the hands and feet, trigeminal neuralgia, suicidal thoughts, mental clarity issues, depression, pains in their feet, pains in their legs. All sorts of things can show up. It jumps to 33% within 2 years. Now, never mind that high cholesterol really doesn't mean anything. It doesn't. You know that, don't you? If you don't, then I encourage you to read my heart disease book. But cholesterol is just a byproduct of the internal stress that's going on in your body. The more stress that you're under internally, the higher your cholesterol goes up. Cholesterol is an antioxidant, believe it or not. And if you've been around for the last 20 years, mm-hmm. about antioxidants, how powerful they are in helping us prevent free radical damage, accelerated aging, and certain pathologies. What drives cholesterol up is having a toxic environment inside, whether that's your diet or medications you're taking or a stressful lifestyle, or it certainly can be genetics, it can be familial. But please know that high cholesterol is only a warning flag. It's not the problem. The problem that triggers arteriosclerosis, that triggers the risk of heart attack and stroke, is inflammation. And we'll be talking about that some today when we get into PCOS and soon some of these other issues. But know that cholesterol is not the villain. It's inflammation. That's what we have to focus on. So if you've got an elevated CRP or an elevated homocysteine or sed rate, that's what needs to be driven down. If you're carrying around excess weight, especially your stomach, your belly, this visceral fat, yellow fat, if you're carrying around this belly fat, you increase your risk of heart attack and stroke, certain cancers, all sorts of things start to show up. But please know that cholesterol is not the villain. Now, what's happening with low thyroid and elevated cholesterol is your body doesn't have the metabolism to regulate this cholesterol, so it goes up. Same thing with your blood pressure. Now, again, what do most doctors do? You come in with high blood pressure, they put you on blood pressure medication. The problem with blood pressure medication, depending on which kind it is, can cause all sorts of different side effects. If it's a beta blocker, it can make you feel even more run down, fatigued, and tired. It can increase your risk of pulmonary diseases, including asthma, COPD, bronchitis, which is also a risk for when you have low thyroid. So you need to be aware that oftentimes what's happening is doctors are treating the symptoms and not the cause. And I say you should be aware. You're already aware of that. I don't know why I'm saying that to you. You know that's true. The doctors are treating symptoms and treating the cause. So we look at some more symptoms here. Fibrocystic breast disease, polycystic ovary syndrome. We'll be talking more about that. Reactive low blood sugars, which is also indicative of adrenal fatigue syndrome. We'll talk about that. The autoimmune skin condition or psoriasis, which is another sign that your body is under internal stress because it cannot fight off this. What really tends to help psoriasis is high doses of antioxidants and really making sure your body is at optimal levels as far as alkalinity and getting the proper nutrients. Nasal allergies, sinus infections, I can't tell you the number of patients over the years who have come to see me who have complained that they have a poor immune function, and one of the things they see is they get repetitive sinus infections, one after the other after the other, and they get on antibiotics after antibiotic after antibiotic, steroid dose pack after steroid dose pack, and they get six, seven of these things. It's almost like they never go away. And what complicates that is a lot of these infections are not bacterial infections. There actually could be a viral infection, or they could be a yeast or fungal infection. And so when you get on antibiotics or steroids, it actually causes more yeast, more fungal infections. And so you get this thing where it is a chronic sinus infection that's being driven not by a bacterial infection, but by being driven by this yeast or fungus. So that in and of itself is something that throws doctors off. But then if we look at what happens with low thyroid is that typically because the thyroid is so important for your immune system, if your thyroid's compromised, then your immune system's compromised. And so because of that, now you can't ever fight off the sinus infection. What I've found over the years is that typically once I get that thyroid function working, then I can get the immune system boosted, and oftentimes what will happen is patients will, they'll get another sinus infection. It'll be the sinus infection from hell, but that will be it, because what happens is the body finally raises its metabolism and is able now to fight off the sinus infection. What are some of the first symptoms of an infection, especially a bacterial infection? Elevated temperature, right? A fever, right? Now, why is that? Well, the body is raising your temperature so that it can then fight off. Part of that is to rally the immune system. The other part of that is because once you get these high temperatures up, then the viruses and bacteria cannot tolerate that. So when your body's working normally, when you get an infection, it is a good thing actually to get this fever to raise your body temperature. Which, by the way, your temperature is a sign of your metabolism. When your temperature is up, your metabolism is up. When your temperature is down, your metabolism is down. So that's how you can monitor how well or how poorly your metabolism is functioning. What the thyroid does, this is very important, point this out right here, is the thyroid, since it's controlling every cell and it's the, you know, it helps with the cellular energy, part of what it does is it helps with the speed. It speeds things up. And when it does that, it drives up more heat, more energy. When the thyroid's compromised, your body temperature goes down, your energy goes down, your metabolism goes down. and your resiliency, your ability to fight off infections, goes down. So it's very important to realize that oftentimes these chronic sinus infections are nothing more than low thyroid. Migraines, allergies, irregular cycles, infertility, all these things can be associated with thyroid. Well, let's do a little bit of physiology here, but hormones are chemicals that are transported through the bloodstream to various organs. And the thyroid gland, which again is in the front part of your neck, at the base there above the breastbone, its main purpose is to produce, store, and release two very important hormones, triiodothyronine, or T3, for that's a kind of a tongue twister there, and the other one is thyroxine, or T4. Now, thyroid-releasing hormone, or TRH, causes the pituitary gland, which is a gland up in your brain, to secrete the thyroid-stimulating hormone. TSH goes up when the body needs more thyroid hormones, and it goes down when the body needs less thyroid hormones. That's very important. We'll clarify that in just a minute. The pituitary gland produces TSH. TSH then triggers the thyroid gland to produce the thyroid hormones, T4 and T3. Once the brain senses the thyroid gland has released enough hormones, TSH will be decreased. That's important. All right, let's look at TSH because this really confuses patients when I'm working with them, especially by phone because we're not looking at their blood work that I've ordered together. When I've got a patient in the clinic, when I've got their blood work back, we're looking at it together and I can point things out. Sometimes it's nice to have a visual. But when I'm on the phone, unless I'm Skyping with somebody overseas, typically we're not looking at the labs together. So where I can draw little diagrams and figures and things on there to make it more comprehensive to them. But so here, just you probably already read this, but look, there's a negative feedback system where TSH and thyroid hormone production is controlled. The higher the TSH number, the less thyroid hormones in the circulatory system are what's circulating in the blood. The lower the TSH number, the more hormones are in the circulatory system. So when you've got an elevated TSH, that's saying that you don't have enough thyroid hormones in the bloodstream. It's telling the body, hey, we need more hormones. When your TSH is really low, the TH number is really, very low, that's saying we've got lots of thyroid hormone in the bloodstream. So because of that, TSH needs to stay low because we don't need any more hormones. All right, one more time. We're going to put it in this way because I know it can be very confusing. This may be redundant, but this may be for my sake more than yours. But when I'm with patients, this really confuses them. And it is confusing because when you talk about having a low thyroid but that you have an elevated TSH, that's confusing, right? Well, here let's put it in perspective. Okay, so when your TSH is elevated, so it comes back high on a blood test. Now, what is high? In conventional lab tests, above 4.5, that's high. Now, some of them are as high as 5.5. They're slowly dropping down. But anything above 4.5 in the conventional world would mean that you have hypo or low thyroid and you need thyroid hormone replacement. Now, in the functional medicine world that I practice in and have practiced in for the last 18, 19 years, what we're looking at is optimal levels. I really don't care about suboptimal. I mean, who wants to be suboptimal? Who wants to be a C student? You could be a B student or an A student, right? You need to realize that lab tests are based on the bell-shaped curve. So they take a population of healthy people, quote-unquote, and in the healthy population, people who don't have a thyroid, they're going to have a certain number, 0.4 to 4.5. That's the normal range for TSH. Anybody below that is hyper. Anybody above that is hypo. The problem with that is you've got people who don't fit inside that bell-shaped curve. I mean, we're as different on the inside, biochemically, as we're on the outside. And because of that, testing through blood is oftentimes nothing more than a guesstimation. Because what works with one patient may not work with another patient. One dose for one patient is too much. A dose that's three times the amount of the other patient may finally actually get the patient, that patient, off the bed and out outside the house. So we're so different biochemically, and just trying to interpret everything through blood work can be a real disaster. Okay, having said that, let me go back so we make sure everybody understands. When your TSH is elevated, that means you have hypothyroid, okay? Or if you're already taking thyroid medication, you need to increase your medication. Ideally, you want to have your TSH about 2.0, especially if you're taking thyroid medication. Now, you could go lower. I mean, because there, you could certainly go lower than 2.0. You could go to 1.0. You can go lower. It depends on how you're feeling, how you're doing, and we'll talk more as we go along in this presentation. Okay? Now, when TSH is deficient, when it's low in the blood lab test, below 0.04 on conventional lab tests, below 1.0 on functional lab tests, then this is interpreted by doctors as the patient having hyper or overactive thyroid. And so in this case, you don't need thyroid medication. So I hope that makes sense to you. Again, it can be confusing, but don't let it be. Don't let it be confusing to you. Now, I need to throw out some terms here that can be a little intimidating. Don't let it intimidate you. Get the big picture, and we're going to move on here. But I'm going to be talking about antibodies here in a few minutes, and it's important that I bring these terms up and the role that these different molecules play in the thyroid cascade here. So the release of TSH triggers thyroid peroxidase enzymes, or TPO, to combine with the iodine with hydrogen peroxide, creating T3 and T4 hormones. Now, here's the big thing here. Anything that disrupts TPO enzyme function interferes with proper thyroid hormone production and lowers thyroid function. That's the big takeaway from this slide for you. Just know that anything that affects TPO enzyme function, and we're going to talk about it in a moment, is going to compromise thyroid function. It's very, very important. So we've talked about these different hormones. Well, let's meet these two important hormones. T3 is a combination of the amino acid. What are amino acids? These are molecules that are found in proteins. So you have 22 different amino acids that combine together in different formulations to create certain proteins, whether that's a hamburger patty or it's an almond. And when you eat protein, you're eating amino acids. And in this case, T3 is the amino acid L-tyrosine and three iodine molecules. Now, for T4, for those of you who are on your second cup of coffee, you can see why it's called T4 and T3, right? Because T4 has got four iodine molecules, and that's the difference there. Now, the real difference between these two is the fact that T3 is the active hormone. In fact, it's 300 times stronger or more active than T4, and it is the hormone responsible for increasing metabolism. Now, important here, let me go back up here and point this out. 80% of thyroid hormones are T4, and only 7% are T3. Now, isn't it interesting that most doctors, at least conventional doctors, certainly not functional doctors like I am, but conventional doctors, what do they test for? TSH and T4. They're not even looking at T3. That is a mistake, a big mistake. Now, 20% of T4 becomes active in the intestines. Now, that's provided there's enough good bacteria available. One of the things that can compromise your thyroid function, even the production of T4, and then T4's got to do what? Now, you know, you got to have T4, and then that's got to convert into T3. But if you don't even have T4, enough T4, you're in trouble. And the problem with the blood test is it may, even if they're checking free and total T4, oftentimes they don't do both, it'll be normal. Oftentimes it'll be low normal, which now we're going to see here in a minute. Low normal for us in the functional medicine world is actually low, because we're looking at optimal health, not looking at just disease. We're looking at how your body's functioning. Is it functioning optimally? That's what functional medicine is all about. But 20% of T4 is derived from the process in the intestines. And when you have dysbiosis, which is a disruption in the intestinal environment, whether that's a yeast overgrowth, leaky gut, food allergies, you've taken too many antibiotics and so you've got a lot of bad bacteria in there, yeast, all these things can show up. And because of that, you could even be on thyroid medication and it really not working like it as well as it could. Certainly, if you're falling through the cracks and not on any medication, that would be more likely that this could be part of the problem. That's why you'll see that a lot of functional medicine doctors like myself, we will do, not only will we do blood tests, but we'll also do functional medicine tests. And one of those tests often done by doctors in functional medicine would be a stool test to see, do you have leaky gut, which is intestinal permeability. You can read more, go into detail about that either in my fibro book or on the treatingandbeating.com website, where there's all sorts of articles, videos, and all sorts of free things on there. But you can read about leaky gut or intestinal permeability as well as everything, a lot of things that we're talking about here today at the treatingandbeating.com website, my main website. Now, 80% of T3 comes from the conversion of T4 into the more active T3. Most of this conversion takes place in the liver. Now, if you've got a compromised liver, then whether that's a fatty liver or hepatitis, or you've got a genetic glitch to where you have chemical sensitivities, where you have detoxification issues, where you have a sluggish liver, then you could be having a problem of converting T4 into T3. And because of that, you may be on Synthroid or levothyroxine, which is a synthetic thyroid medication, and it's not even converting. It's not even doing anything. And because of that, you still feel run down and tired and you smell something and you gain 5 pounds. And, you know, all those things that go with low thyroid, even though you're taking prescription thyroid medicine. And what you want to realize is it's all about how your body's functioning. And that's the beauty of functional medicine, is that what we do, we're looking at how well the different systems are functioning. And we do that through specialized testing and good old-fashioned detective work, question and answer consultations. But a lot of my patients, especially those that I work with chronic fatigue syndrome, which tend to be a real challenge, have chemical sensitivities. And this may apply to you. You have trouble with strong odors. So smells really bother you, whether that's gasoline, tobacco, book print, walking in an office, Max, you know, ink, whatever that is, perfumes, it really bothers you. You get funny reactions to medications. You find you can't take acetaminophen. You know, you can't take certain drugs, or a little goes a long way, whether that's with drugs. You take a Benadryl and you sleep for 4 days, or it's alcohol. You know, one sip and you're down for the count. When you get these funny reactions to these things, that's a sign you have a sluggish liver. And I go into much more detail about that in the fibro book, because that's what I see in my fibro patients, much more so in my CFS patients. But it applies to everybody. If you've got a sluggish liver, your body's not going to work as well as it could, and that can drive up your cholesterol, can increase your risk of arteriosclerosis, heart attack, stroke. But in today's talk, what it could lead to is low thyroid function, and that's what we want to talk about, is that if you've got a sluggish liver, then that needs to be addressed. Now, the T3 and T4 are carried through the bloodstream by protein molecules known as thyroxine-binding globulin, TBG. Okay, don't get bogged down in the words here, but TBG is this molecule which carries the thyroid hormones to the appropriate cells. Here's the big thing here. Here's the big picture. Anything that interferes with TBG will compromise thyroid function. What can interfere with TBG? Well, environmental pollutants, BPA, arsenic, mercury, things that we breathe in the air, all sorts of chemicals we put on our bodies, foods that we take in that have artificial ingredients in them, all those things can compromise TGB. Now, I'm going to guess that your doctor probably doesn't know this. And because of that, your doctor is probably not testing to see if you have a compromised TGB. It's just a guess. But I would, if I were a wagering man, I'd say I'd be right. So we look at what is the big catalyst for the dysfunction in thyroid. As I take a break here and get a sip of coffee here. The thyroid gland is controlled by another gland in your brain called the hypothalamus, and also the pituitary, also in your brain. And the hypothalamus, pituitary, and the adrenals, called the HPA axis, these things help regulate our stress coping abilities. When the hypothalamus gland, which is really, you can kind of think of it as the body's computer, and what it's designed to do is to regulate most every system in the body, whether that's your immune system, your digestive system, your circulatory system, your neurotransmitters, you know, your brain chemicals, your sleep-wake cycle, your libido. It controls all these things. We don't have to think about taking 14 breaths per minute. We don't have to think about pumping. We don't have to think about pumping blood through 60 miles of arteries and veins every time we do that. We don't think about breaking down digesting the food we eat. We don't have to think about these things, thank goodness, right? The hypothalamus regulates these things. When we go outside and it's really hot and we start to sweat, we do that because the hypothalamus is trying to cool the body down by sweating. If we go into a cold room and we break out in goosebumps, why do we do that? The body's trying to warm the body up. So the hypothalamus controls these things. Now, when it gets under too much stress, it starts to shut down this regulatory system. And in fact, the first thing that happens in short-term, immediate stress, is that you get a rush of cortisol. And too much cortisol, which is one of your stress-coping hormones, which is released from your adrenal glands, two P-shaped glands that sit above your kidneys there in the back, when that goes up too high, it can block the conversion of T4 to active T3. Now, long-term stress compromises thyroid function. And so if we look at the fact that stress definitely takes its toll on the body, we see that the hypothalamus, which is releasing thyroid, releasing hormone, that whole system, that whole feedback mechanism can become disoriented and unproductive. And now, a big part of what happens that triggers this is once the hypothalamus starts to get under too much stress. And what can trigger too much stress? Well, it could be a chronic infection. It can be an illness. It can be working 60 hours a week. It can be mental stress, physical stress, emotional stress. It can be chemically induced stress, whether that's, you know, the wrong drugs, too many drugs, or whatever it is. But some type of stressor comes along and throws your body out of whack. Now, your body can deal with that for a while, but eventually it will take its toll on your stress-coping glands, the adrenal glands. And so acute and chronic long-term stress can compromise these glands and lead to a syndrome, which is a group of symptoms known as adrenal fatigue syndrome. Now, in the traditional medical world, which again largely treats symptoms and not causes, they don't acknowledge this thing called adrenal fatigue syndrome because it's very black and white, which I find very ignorant, because patients are not always black and white. They don't fall in one group or the other. They're not either low or high. They can be in between. Case in point, my CFS and my fibro patients oftentimes have many of the same symptoms, and they're somewhere in the middle. Just because you have a cutoff of 4.5, and the patient walks in and they're 4.4, and you tell them that they don't have low thyroid, that's ignorant, and they have all the symptoms of low thyroid. That's ignorance. That's stupidity. Treat the patient, not the blood work. When I go and lecture, what I hear oftentimes, certainly more in the past than now, but when I have medical doctors at my talks, they would ask me about this adrenal fatigue syndrome, that was something that they never were taught in medical school. Because what they were taught, there was two things. There was either Addison's disease or Cushing's disease. So it's either adrenal failure or your adrenal is over-ramped up. They don't know anything in between. Just know that doctors who practice functional medicine like I do, we very much believe in adrenal fatigue, and I'm sure you do too, after I go through this little few slides here, because you're going to recognize yourself, because most people in America have adrenal fatigue. We're under too much stress, and we don't manage it correctly. And because of that, eventually, we deplete our stress coping chemicals, and we deplete our stress coping glands from being able to handle the stress that we encounter on a daily basis. Look at the symptoms there of adrenal fatigue: headaches, brain fog, low body temperature, cold hands, cold feet is something we are told is classic for low thyroid, but it's also, you see that for adrenal fatigue. But low energy is the big one. Low energy, and then this thing that you find that you don't have a lot of stamina or resiliency to stress, so stress is magnified. But you can also have, with adrenal fatigue, you have some of the symptoms are hair loss and swelling in the ankles and feet, and we heard that with thyroid. You can also get ringing in the ears, which is a symptom of low thyroid. You can have problems with irregular menstrual cycles. You can have problems with PMS. You can have mood disorders. You can be anxious. You can be fatigued. So there's a very much, or almost, adrenal fatigue and low thyroid are very much a mirror image of each other, aren't they? But look at in the adrenal world, you see that we have this thing called general adaptation syndrome, and there's three phases to that. So the first phase of this general adaptation syndrome is fight or flight, and that's the initial alarm reaction where the pituitary releases adrenal corticotropin hormone, or ACTH, and then you get adrenaline, or norepinephrine, and cortisol release from the adrenal gland, so you have more drive, zip, you're able to... you get all this, all the energy and blood rushes to your brain and rushes to your muscles. Every other bodily process in the body is slowed down, including digestion. And this is to make you ready to either fight or run away. Now, this is short-term stress, and it causes elevation of cortisol, which then blocks the conversion of T4 to T3. Then you go into the resistance phase, and this is where a lot of people are. You know, they're getting by, you know, they're doing okay, but they're under a lot of stress, and it's been going on for quite some time, and whether that's a boss, you know, that's an ogre, or it's, you know, a bad marriage, or it's a lifestyle that has got them to where they're really unhealthy, carrying around a lot of extra weight, it being sedentary, whatever it is, but eventually this long-term stress comes at a price. And that price is when your adrenals become compromised, your thyroid is going to become compromised. That's just the way it is. You're going to have a lot of symptoms of low thyroid when you're in this phase here. And it's hard to separate those out. You need to work with a doctor who can do that for you. But if you continue down that road, you go into adrenal exhaustion. This is where a lot of my patients are. So what happens is over the years they've continued to be under all this stress, and then eventually it catches up with them. Now, oftentimes, many of these patients are taking things that make it worse, and they're taking amphetamine, stimulants, Adderall, Cytomel. Well, Cytomel could be okay, depending on how you use that with your thyroid. But they're taking Adderall, Ritalin, and Vyvanse, and these other medications, which are amphetamines. Now, if you went out on the street and you sold those, they'd lock you up. They'd put you away. But we've got doctors who are prescribing Adderall and Ritalin and Vyvanse, not only to adults, but to young folks who are in their adolescence, which is very scary, and teenagers, which is just as scary, because their brains have not fully developed. We don't know what we're doing to those neurotransmitters, to the plasticity. Long term, what's going to happen, don't know. It's a scary thought. But the fact that amphetamines are closely related to cocaine should give us pause and question, is this something we want our kids or we want ourselves to be taking? And I would say no. But when you're taking the Adderall, these amphetamines, these stimulants, to get you through the day because your adrenals are exhausted, you only make it worse, because that makes the adrenals, you're just whipping them all day long. You know, you're whipping them like an old mule, and eventually they're just going to eventually just give out. And then you really do go into as you do have adrenal failure. And I've seen that over the years with my patients who started out taking these medications in their teenage years, and then when they became young adults, they eventually just their adrenals couldn't make any cortisol, no norepinephrine or adrenaline, and they had to go on Herculean doses of adrenal hormones, which, you know, then typically cause weight gain and all sorts of extra baggage that they didn't want. You don't want to go down that route. So when you get in this adrenal exhaustion, now you run the risk of having all sorts of things. Poor health is just a daily occurrence for you. Now, how do you know if you have adrenal fatigue? Well, here's some clues. Do you crave salt? If you've got low adrenal function, you often crave salt. Now, there's a lot of folks on the line, especially females. No offense, it's just the way it is, but there'll be a lot of females that crave sugar. Men tend to crave salty things, it seems, in my experience, and women oftentimes crave sugar, certainly more than men do. But do you crave salt? And a lot of people are shaking their heads and saying, yeah, I do, along with sugar. And chocolate bars, right, chocolate. But craving salt, why is that? Because sodium helps to recirculate the adrenal hormones, so you get more out of it, and it helps the adrenals work harder. And so when you get run down, a lot of times you turn to those salty snack foods. That's what you want, and you'll crave that. Now, oftentimes when you've got low adrenal function, you're not hungry in the morning, and so you skip breakfast. Now, you do that really as a self-medicating attempt to keep your cortisol level at a higher level. Your cortisol levels, your cortisol is one of the hormones released by the adrenal cortex. There's two lobes of the adrenal gland, the adrenal cortex and the adrenal medulla. The cortex releases cortisol and DHEA, aldosterone, some other hormones. The medulla releases norepinephrine or adrenaline. The cortex, though, when it releases cortisol, it's going to release the most of it, or it should, unless you're messed up, which a lot of my patients are. They get their days and nights mixed up, you know. But what should happen is your cortisol level should be at its highest in the morning. And then as the day goes on, your cortisol level drops. And then by bedtime, it should be at its lowest, and your melatonin level, your sleep hormone, should be going up, so that allows you to fall asleep. What happens, a lot of people, they get their days and nights mixed up, so their cortisol level may be low in the morning, but it's flatlined. It stays at the same number throughout the day. In fact, even a little elevated for what it should be at nighttime. Or certain people will get a second wind at bedtime, so their cortisol level will go up instead of going down, and that will sabotage their melatonin levels so they can't fall asleep oftentimes and can't stay asleep, and that has to be addressed. But you crave, you skip breakfast because when you fast, when you don't eat, that raises your cortisol level. So a lot of people who with a low cortisol level have found if they don't eat in the morning, they can keep what little cortisol level they have up. And this is a way to kind of self-medicate themselves. The problem with that is that skipping breakfast is, and we've all been told this, and maybe we gave it some thought, and a lot of us just shrugged it off, because some of us have such bad adrenal fatigue that even the thought of eating breakfast, anything, in the morning makes us nauseated. In fact, one of the signs of adrenal fatigue is you wake up and feel a little nauseated, a little hungover, a little sick to your stomach. But for most people with adrenal fatigue, they'll find that they don't eat breakfast, and that allows them to keep their cortisol level up. Now, here's the problem with that, is that eventually you will have a hypoglycemic event. You'll have a low blood sugar problem, because most people with adrenal fatigue will also have low blood sugar. So if they skip a meal, typically not breakfast, but if they go past lunch, boy, they're going to be a bear. They're going to be irritable, going to feel run down, get a headache, may get irregular heartbeat, all kinds of things start to show up. So low blood sugar goes with adrenal fatigue. So does low blood pressure, because when your when your adrenals are compromised, the aldosterone, which helps to regulate blood volume in the cortex, the aldosterone in the cortex of the adrenal glands is compromised. And so you will have, oftentimes you have low blood pressure. What is low blood pressure? You know, if you're at 90 over 60, somewhere there or lower, that's pretty low. That's not always a negative thing, not always. It can be, you know, that you're really in great shape. It could be, you know, just how God made you. But oftentimes, when you have low blood pressure like that, what you're experiencing is a problem with getting enough blood and oxygen to the brain and to the muscles. And so oftentimes you feel fatigued, both mentally and physically. You can also feel a little out of it, a little spacey, okay? Now, cold hands and cold feet, we've talked about that. And then the other thing that tends to happen is the longer you've had adrenal fatigue, the more problem you have handling stress. You don't have a lot of resiliency, a lot of stamina to it. So stress really takes it out of you. And you get to where, if it's really bad, you get to where you can really hardly stand any stimulation, whether that's loud noises, crowds, lights.